Hi, welcome back to On the Same Page for another episode. I'm Lauren and here with my two co-hosts,
Flo
and Shona.
Hi, well, today we are back for our final episode with Voice. Today we are going to be doing an awards style show, which you guys listening have voted for. We put out some polls on Instagram and Twitter with a number of different categories. And today we are going to announce those winners and we're going to discuss those winners a little bit as well. So let's get started.
So the first category is best female protagonist. And we've got the winner is Jo March, which I think I'm very happy about that because I voted for Jo. Did anyone else vote for her?
Yeah, of course I did. Love Jo.
I just pictured Saoirse Ronan as Jo when I was reading the book because I read it after I saw the film and I was just like, she is just Jo. I think Jo's just such a great character. Like, I'm a writer, she's a writer. I just like identify with her so much and she's just a bit of a badass, really.
I think Jo is just universally great in any adaptation she's in. Like, Winona Ryder was Jo in an adaptation. Do you know Little Women has an anime? I think I first read so I did a manga of Little Women. That's how I first got introduced to Little Women when I was young. And I loved Jo. So I read the book and I still love Jo. So yeah, universal, amazing.
Yeah, and she had sort of like stiff competition. I mean, I thought Katniss would have won, to be honest. I feel like she has the most like popular appeal. But I don't know. Maybe everyone's over the Hunger Games era.
Katniss is such a bland character though. She's just like that. Like, I didn't
really
I didn't get much from her.
No, I thought like, well, in the books she was a bit more like, she's just a traumatized child essentially. Yeah. It's like gone through some stuff. And then there was June, wasn't there, as well, from The Handmaid's Tale, which is, I can see why she didn't win, because she's, you know, you're more focused on sort of like the horrors of that story rather than like the protagonist. Whereas Jo, you sort of get like such a sense of like who she is. And yeah, she's just like more rounded. But I suppose that's the book, isn't it? It like is focusing on those four girls, so you get more of their character.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that June as a character, while I admired her in a lot of senses, she did at times tend to irritate me just because I was like, why are you doing this? But not to say that her actions weren't justified or anything, but I could maybe see why that might have contributed.
I think in comparison to the other people in the category, like Jo, there's something really charming about Jo being really similar to Louisa May Alcott. And so it just seems quite like a wholesome choice to have for best female protagonist. I don't know why. Little Women's just warm, isn't it?
Yeah. It stands whether you're a kid or you're like an adult, I think. Whereas like Katniss Everdeen, I feel like I've really grown out of the Hunger Games and that sort of dystopian thing. Yeah. And then June's very adult. But everyone can love Jo, so she's a worthy winner. So that brings us to best male protagonist as well, which was a controversial one. Well, not controversial, just it was a three-way tie. So clearly people were very split about this one. So it was Atticus Finch, Bilbo Baggins, and Percy Jackson. Why do you think it's like split like that?
I think that the thing is they're three very different characters and they have a lot of different attributes that people therefore I think would flock to. And so there's not necessarily one, like you're talking about Jo March being this kind of overall likable character. I think that with the male characters, there's maybe a little bit more diversity in terms of which characters people would like more.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because they're all very different. Like, we've gone from like fantasy Bilbo Baggins to like Atticus Finch, which is like one of the biggest like characters in like classic literature. So yeah, I think it's like maybe some people have gone for like, oh, I think this is a good person or a good character, and then other people have gone for like childhood like nostalgia with like Percy Jackson and Bilbo Baggins and stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think nostalgia ties into this tie very, very well. Kill a Mockingbird's on like the syllabus for like school, right? So a lot of people have grown up with Atticus the same way that Bilbo and Percy have just been like their fantasy favorite. Yeah, I'm not exactly surprised that there's a three-way tie, actually. It kind of makes sense. They're all, I don't know, I could have voted for all three of these if I could. It was a tough choice.
Yeah, I also think that the Percy Jackson and Lord of the Rings fan bases tend to be quite like strong in terms of opinion. So therefore it kind of makes sense that that would be reflected in that three-way tie of votes.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't vote for either of those because the fourth option was Hassan from The Kite Runner. And for anyone that like hasn't read The Kite Runner, Hassan is just like the kindest character, but just a lot of bad stuff happens to him. And it's probably like the most grown up of all of the options, I think, because The Kite Runner is quite a deep book, but he goes through so much and he still remains this like good person. And I just think, I don't know, I wish he'd won. I wish I could be giving Hassan a victory right now, but he's in my heart. He's in my heart. So moving away from protagonists, we decided to do a vote on the best genre. So we had fantasy, thriller, romance, and coming of age. And surprisingly, thriller won. I thought that coming of age or romance or even fantasy would top it, but everyone likes a thriller, apparently. Why do you think that is?
I love a thriller. I voted for that one because I just think that nothing really compares. I don't think you can go wrong with a thriller. Sometimes, like, I love a good romance book, but there is like a line between a good romance and kind of a corny one. But I feel like with a thriller, you just can't go wrong with that. You know what you've signed up for when you go into it, and you know that hopefully you're going to be thrilled.
I was shocked. I thought romance was robbed. That's quite a dramatic statement, actually. I thought loads of people would go for that for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I've been reading a lot of TikTok books recently and a lot of them lean on romance. Yeah, I don't like thriller, so maybe that's where my bitterness comes from.
But I feel like thriller is such a versatile genre because you can have like romantic thrillers. A romance just sort of feels like, you know, those books you see in like Morrison's or the supermarket, which is like clearly targeted at like my mom. It's in his kiss, or it's in his whisper, or something like that. Like, for me, that's romance, and they're all so formulaic and so like da-da-da-da-da. Whereas you can have like a thriller romance where there's like, ooh, like romance elements, but then there's what's going on, who is he, what's he doing. Like, I think like as a genre it's a lot more broad. But then that's the problem with the best genre category, because so many books now just have loads of different genres rather than being one whole thing. So yeah, because a lot of coming of age books are romance books as well. Maybe that's why. But on a whole, thriller is probably just the most exciting, or what people will pick up.
Yeah, and I think what you said there kind of captures that really well, because that diversity that comes with a kind of thriller genre, like you said, these books in Morrison's that maybe won't necessarily appeal to everybody, but a thriller genre with that's got all those other elements woven into it as well, I think is maybe more able to appeal to more of an audience, which would then kind of make sense in that reflection of those votes.
No, you guys have raised really, really valid points. I don't know why I'm defending romance so much. I don't even think I voted for romance. I think I actually voted for coming of age.
Well, you just said it was robbed.
In retrospect, I do think it was robbed. I mean, I was just expecting it, but yeah.
Are you just thinking like Bridgerton, sort of Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah, there is something very like appealing about thriller. Like, it's sort of like synonymous with being like the page turner sort of a thing. So I can see why people would like that the most.
I suppose you've got like different, like I said, the different types of thriller, but you've got like more crime thriller. And I think it like appeals to like both like genders as well. Whereas like romance is typically seen or definitely marketed towards women. Whereas like thriller, I don't know, like for example, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, I feel like that's both equally for women and for men, and I just feel like it's not written with a certain audience in mind, if that makes sense, and that's why it probably has that broader appeal.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of romance stories too that are kind of strictly romance tend to be a little bit more predictable. Maybe you kind of know for the most part that the two main characters are likely going to end up together, and it's marketed that way. So I think that maybe a thriller provides that unpredictability and gives you something that like you don't know if it's going to have a good ending, which is sometimes what you want to read, because it's a little bit more realistic almost in a way than a romance book that always has a happy ending. Not to be a pessimist, but
yeah, maybe we're all just really cynical voters. That's why we went for thriller. We need realism or nothing.
For best trope, there were many nominations for this, all really good nominations, but the winner of best trope is Enemies to Lovers. No surprise.
Not a fan.
Wait, what?
No, I'm looking at all of the other options. So Secret Sibling Twist, love it. Orphan with Magical Powers, yeah, a bit basic, but like, so's Enemies to Lovers. Actually, bad guy turned good's worse. No,
but bad guy turned good guy is like that belongs in the trash. Like that's terrible.
I think just I like a secret sibling twist. I recently read Testaments, the sequel for Handmaid's Tale, and like there's a secret sibling twist, and I was like, what? Like it's just so much more. Like I think like we were talking with thrillers, just on like. Whoa, like I didn't see that coming. Whereas enemies to lovers, you know it. Like again, I'm thinking of Bridgerton, but you know the whole like Kate and Anthony thing. It's so obvious that they're gonna get together. It's so boring, and I'm like, this is just I don't know, I can't deal with it.
It's so good though. It's like the whole like enemies to lovers is so it's so overdone, but every time it happens, it just feels like the first time you've watched it, you know, like wow. And also, every time you say secret sibling twist, it sounds like a cocktail or something.
Should we invent that? Should we do like a cocktail episode?
Yes.
That would be good.
No, but I definitely, I feel like enemies to lovers is a classic. I mean, Jane Austen, I love her. She killed it with that. And
it's still the here. Enemies to lovers.
It's still here. It still exists. It's still kicking. And that's great.
I'd agree. There's a thin line between love and hate. And that's evident.
You know what's good about it as well, like it's this literary trope, but you see it played out in like reality TV. Like Love Island right now has an enemies to lovers, and it's still great. It's a great trope.
That is true. Probably more realistic than the secret sibling twist, but I'm slightly contradicting myself here, but it just frustrates me because you can see it coming. And maybe it stresses me out, and maybe that's why I hate it. I just get stressed by it.
I think the reason why I probably like enemies to lovers so much is like you get to see a proper like the character development is just very satisfying because you get to know all the bad stuff from the outset, and then it's like, oh, how do you overcome that? But then again, I guess bad guy turned good guy is the same sort of a vibe. But the issue with bad guy turned good guy is it's all about fixing a person, and I don't think that's the same with enemies to lovers. You accept the flaws in enemies to lovers, and you don't have to fix someone or work through it. They just love conquers all. That's the most depressing. Love conquers all. Next up is Best Original World. Just going to say the nominations for this one because I think they're all excellent. They're all excellent worlds. So we had Middle Earth from Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, Westeros from Game of Thrones, Narnia from The Chronicles of Narnia, and Wonderland from Alice in Wonderland. And the winner was Wonderland. With an overwhelming majority, 42%. Was it overwhelming? I'm not sure. 42%. That's quite a big chunk. Though I think there was one vote in between Wonderland and Middle Earth.
Yeah, I'm surprised Middle Earth didn't take it. But I voted for Wonderland just because there's so many different things. It's a bit weird. It's more colourful. I don't know. Like Middle Earth to me in my brain is very green. I don't know why I've gone for the landscape in terms of my voting, but I have. It's just very green, very rocky, whereas like Wonderland, there's mushrooms, there's like, it's just colourful, and there's cards, and there's flamingos, and there's a queen, and it's great, and it's just a bit like childhood dream. I was really obsessed with like the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland when I was a kid, though. Watching it back, it's not very good, but like, I loved that, like, sort of, I loved all of her dresses and stuff, so yeah, maybe again, nostalgia's impacting me here.
Yeah, it's like slightly surreal, and so I guess if you're booking a summer holiday to go anywhere, you're going to go Wonderland then.
Oh, that's changing it. Well, that's Best Original World, not like where I'm going on holiday. I feel like I don't know. I'd love to stay in a cottage in Middle Earth or like a little hobbit hole.
Oh yeah, the Shire. Oh, actually, you know what? That's a shout. Actually, the Shire for a holiday.
Yeah, I'd Airbnb that, but no, like. I don't think it's the best world. I think Wonderland.
I think possibly the reason why Middle Earth didn't take it is because I think in comparison to Wonderland, I think Middle Earth has been sort of like the touchstone of so many other original worlds. Like Westeros is like pretty, it's not similar, but like there is a link there. I do appreciate Middle Earth though.
Yeah, I think I was kind of surprised that Wonderland won, but now that we're talking about it, it does make a little bit more sense. Like it's kind of weird and wonderful, and I guess Middle Earth is very kind of strictly fantasy, maybe even like a little bit more realistic in terms of it's all, you know, fields and mountains, and maybe makes a little bit more sense logically than this kind of strange down the rabbit hole world.
I just love that. It's so, like, I'm trying so hard not to say the word trippy, but it's so trippy. Like, I love that idea. Narnia, we haven't spoken much about Narnia. I feel like Narnia could have, I don't know, it could have swayed me. I like that sort of how it looked. But Westeros, I don't think Westeros would have won, because in terms of a world, I wouldn't want to be there. It's really horrible and it's really medieval.
I think maybe with Narnia, maybe it's because I'm not as familiar with it in comparison to the other worlds, but because they enter through a closet, it just doesn't seem as expansive as the other places for some reason.
But I suppose, like, the world as well, like, includes the creatures that are in that world.
Mm.
And I feel like creatures in Wonderland are a lot more interesting. Like I think because you see them, they're also iconic, like the Mad Hatter, the March Hare. Like, yeah, I kind of like the characters a bit more, and they're part of that world. So
yeah, the Wonderland characters are very different and original, and obviously Middle Earth characters still are original, and the same with Narnia, but it's like elves, and it's a little bit more kind of traditional in the fairy tale sense, rather than when you look at Wonderland and you're kind of like, why is this rabbit talking to me, kind of thing.
Yeah, I like that. It's more kids, whereas like Middle Earth feels more like adult, but I like how sort of like childish Wonderland is.
Next up is best literary couple, and the winner of this, the true ship that everyone has chosen for this, is Nick and Charlie from Heartstopper. Yay. First of all, as soon as I suggested these two, I was like, I had a feeling that they'd take it. I think in comparison to the other people in the nomination, so you got like Seffi and Callum from Noughts and Crosses, you have Connell and Marianne from Normal People, and Rachel and Nick from Crazy Rich Asians. They're just really wholesome. Nick and Charlie are just wholesome throughout. It's just nice. They're a great couple.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about the other couples, Rachel and Nick, they have their problems. Also, they're just a bit sort of, well, not Rachel, but Nick's sort of bland. I'm like, yeah, he's really rich, which is why I'd go for him. But like, I don't know, just, I don't see her attraction to him. Whereas Nick and Charlie, like, makes so much sense. And it's just so, like you said, like, just wholesome.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with a wholesome couple. And I think that perhaps that adversity that they will have had to face as well, kind of, and overcoming that, then just makes that so much more of a feel-good relationship.
And I also just thought that, like, Normal People in general is quite whiny. I know it's such an unpopular opinion, and maybe I need to, like, look at it again, but it just wasn't really for me. I just, Connell and Marianne are just, like, just, they're a bit meh.
Yeah, I think they're a terrible couple, to be honest. Not my favourite. I love normal people. I love the complexity of Normal People. And like the depth of the relationship, and how like there is no like good and bad or whatever. There's just this gray space with trying to figure out who you are and like where you stand in a relationship. I think it's great, but for best literary couple, it had to be, I don't know. I like that it's a positive thing here.
Yeah, I agree.
So moving on, the next thing we have is best classic novel. And the winner of this was Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And this actually kind of surprised me. I feel like Frankenstein is obviously a classic and a great one, but I didn't think people would flock to it as much as they did. I think The Count of Monte Cristo was robbed and is very underrated. So I think that's just honestly one of my favorites. But not complaining about Frankenstein.
Yeah, I was certain Pride and Prejudice was going to win just because it's just got such popular like appeal and stuff. Or The Colour Purple, even. I didn't see Frankenstein winning. I suppose it's the one that though people recognise the most. You know, like, even if you've never really properly read the book, you understand the story, you understand, like, its place in Gothic literature more so than, like, the others, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually.
Lauren, you've convinced me to read The Count of Monte Cristo. It's on my list.
It's so good. I don't even know. It's, like, such a good kind of, it's about revenge, but there's a lot more that goes into it as well. And I personally just kind of love the comeuppance of people who do bad things.
Oh, nice. No, I want to read it. It just always puts me off because it looks like quite a big novel. But in terms of like how it's written, because that's my problem with most classic novels, like they can be quite, like the language can be a bit inaccessible. How's it sort of written?
you have to pick. So it's originally, I think it was a French book. So it's translated into English. So you have to pick the right translation that doesn't translate like literally, because that literal translation obviously doesn't always make as much sense. But the translation that's adapted is a pretty easy read. It can be a little bit daunting, but overall, I didn't feel as though the way that it was written inhibited my ability to like enjoy that book.
Oh yeah, that's actually a really good point about translations in general, actually. It is about like which one you go for. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that there are differences between them.
Yeah, because there's so many kind of dual meanings when you translate something that like what it translates to literally sometimes misses the subtext of what it was intended in the original language. So making sure that you translate that subtext well is kind of just as important.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's so interesting with translated books. I just never think of it like that, that like someone's first of all got to understand what they're saying in another language, and then to try and get like the author's intentions. Like I'd be so annoyed if like I'd written something a certain way for a certain effect and then the translation like just completely cut that out and cut that meaning out.
Yeah, agreed.
Like certain words and certain phrases just don't exist in other languages.
Yeah.
So like it's exactly what you said. That's about like getting that original intention or like feel across as best you can. I liked showing your point about like classic books being kind of inaccessible to read. I voted for The Colour Purple for this. I love The Colour Purple. I think it's a beautifully written book. It's in fact like it's like one of the few books that I've like reread just because I just love it so much. The writing style of it is really interesting too. And it's just so raw. Like it's just very like captivating to read. It's very hard to read as well though, in a different way, not like, oh, like this is difficult, the language is difficult, or like there's too many like, I don't know, convoluted phrases or whatever. Like to be honest, when I read Frankenstein, I was like, what does this mean? It's difficult to read in like a content way, like the content's pretty cool to read. But yeah, I was also surprised about Pride and Prejudice. I don't know, I feel like people, if they haven't read the book, they've definitely watched adaptations of it.
I think that's why Frankenstein's won. I think because of the idea of it rather than the actual book, because like I said before, everyone knows sort of the story, everyone's familiar with the figure, everyone's familiar with like that Halloween costume. And maybe that's why people have thought, well, I know that one, so I'm going to click on that.
I have a question for you guys, actually. Do you think the sort of idea of Frankenstein in popular culture has like shifted from like the original book, the original story?
Oh, 100%, because I used to think before I knew what like the book was that that was the monster, like he was just Frankenstein. I didn't realize it was the name of the doctor that like created him. So completely shifted from the original story.
Yeah, I think a lot of Frankenstein becomes in modern terms very it loses the complexity of the character, who's just kind of the monster, is perhaps a monster, but trying to be understood and kind of fit into the world. And when you think of Frankenstein, you just think, oh, well, it's just this awful creature. Mm-hmm. But there's actually so much more complexity that when you read the book, you realize. But if you don't, all you have is, like you said, that Halloween costume concept that just kind of is this scary idea. But in reality, it's so much more complex and kind of has like a deeper meaning, I would say, as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's like could be interpreted about like ethics as well, and ethics within medicine. It also sort of relates to like AI and like today, like at what point does something that's created by humans become human? And the fact that it was written, what, like early 19th century, I want to say? Like, and it still like has the same questions that are relevant today, shows why it is probably a good book and why it's like one in this category.
Do you think at the time of writing Frankenstein, people empathized with Victor Frankenstein more than the monster creature?
That's an interesting one. I don't know.
Because I think from a modern perspective, I think like when you read the book, I think this is why the book is so great. I feel like nowadays, I think most people would feel for the creature.
But at the same time, like, depends on your perspective at that time. If you're like suspicious of medicine, because there was no real like medical establishment at that time, like it might have just increased your suspicions in medicine, in doctors, and you might have hated them both.
But... is it a universal opinion that Victor Frankenstein sucks? Is the worst. No, he's terrible. Like, imagine being brought into the world, like given life to the world, and like the first thing like someone does is just like scream and tell you you're like the worst.
He's a bad dad. He's such a bad dad.
Awful. terrible. But yeah, well done, Mary. I'm sure she's really, really proud of getting Best Classic Novel.
So quite the opposite, I would say, from Best Classic Novel. We have gone to Best TikTok Book. And this was a close one. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo won, but only by one vote to The Midnight Library, which came second. And I stand by this book. I love The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. I think it's such a good book. I am kind of surprised that It Ends With Us didn't come higher in the ratings, because I feel like on TikTok, that is all I've ever heard anybody talk about. But with that being said, definitely see the hype with The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo if you haven't read it. I do recommend, because it is worth all of the hype, and it's got a lot of complexities with those characters that I think you really enjoy.
So what's the premise behind it? Because I haven't read it.
It's about this old Hollywood movie star, and she has like never told anybody her story. So she basically gives this journalist the opportunity to tell her story in a feature. And she's had seven husbands, and it kind of goes through all of the relationships that she's had and kind of how some of them were a front for something else, which I won't go into, but it's got a good kind of subplot to it that you don't realize until you get into it. And it kind of all makes sense that it's like 1950 that she lives in. So it's a difficult time in society.
Oh no, I definitely want to read it. I might go out and grab it like on my lunch break. Yeah.
Next we have Best Spin-off, and the winner for that was The Song of Achilles. Now I haven't actually read this. Have either of you read this?
Nope.
No, I own the book, but haven't read it. No, yeah, it's another TikTok book. So I'm not surprised it won, because I think in comparison to the other three in the category, The Song of Achilles is just, I think it's more synonymous with TikTok. But the plot of it, it's a book that was published in 2011 by Madeline Miller, and it's set during the Greek heroic age, and it's sort of an adaptation of Homer's Iliad as told from the perspective of Patroclus.
Patroclus. I have no idea how to pronounce that.
So yeah, it takes a different route on the sort of like traditional story, I guess. Were you surprised that anything else didn't get higher than that?
Not really, to be honest, because Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, like, it's only just come out, and then I feel like you're not going to read that unless you're like a diehard Hunger Games fan. I think like Hunger Games has had its like time in the sun. Death Comes to Pemberley, which is like a Pride and Prejudice spin-off, I feel like it's not really like something young people would read, if that makes sense. I saw the TV show and then read the book afterwards, and that's how I sort of like read it. I quite like it because it's sort of like a Pride and Prejudice but murder mystery, and a bit more like serious. Like, it really goes into like what an asshole like Wickham is, like even more so than Pride and Prejudice. It's like Darcy and like Elizabeth have problems in their marriage. It's a good sort of like what happened after. But yeah, I'm not surprised it didn't win, because obviously like Achilles is like big on TikTok, isn't it?
Yeah, and I guess maybe putting like new life into such like a classic story and like imagining a different way of it happening, I guess that's kind of appealing, because it's one of those things that people have heard about just through like common knowledge, or like just growing up, like, you learn these like sort of like old tales, but then just like refreshing it, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, I think the other three tend to be quite niche, as maybe spin-offs do, because I think people who read the spin-offs are the people who really loved the original. But like you said, because it's refreshing this whole kind of idea of Greek mythology, which people tend to enjoy in general, it kind of makes sense that that would be something that people voted for.
I think it's a good thing though, because I haven't read the book, but Greek mythology is, I always assume it's something that people that do classics like understand. Like, it's something that I've never really had accessibility to at school, apart from like the sort of basic stuff when I was in primary school. But like, my school didn't have like classics at A level or anything like that, and then sort of bringing that into like a more popular domain, I think that's a good thing, and probably why it's won as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So now on to our last category, Best Film Adaptation, and the winner for this, which I think is not surprising at all, is Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring trilogy. Is anybody surprised that this won?
Not surprised, but it was a really strong category. I wanted to vote for all. To be honest, I probably wouldn't have voted for Lord of the Rings out of all of them, but that's just me and my opinion on. I don't hate Lord of the Rings. I'm not obsessed with it. Like, I think sort of when you're a kid, I don't know, you latch onto things, and Lord of the Rings was just something I never latched onto.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think it is a great adaptation, regardless of how you feel about it. Like, I'm not personally the biggest Lord of the Rings fan, but I can accept that it is a great adaptation and that the movies do, I would say, do it justice.
Yeah, I only just recently watched them. I feel like I've watched them as a kid, but like never by choice. Like, my family love Lord of the Rings, but I've never just sat down and watched it. So yeah, I watched the first film recently, and it is like, it's a great adaptation. It's just epic. Like, the entirety of it is just like incredible. Not to say like there wasn't enough work put into the other films or anything, but there was just like, there's like, I feel like it was a labor of like absolute love from Peter Jackson.
Yeah, but then I don't know, the personal history of David Copperfield, if any of you seen it.
No, I have.
No.
I love it. I love it. It's such a beautiful film, because Dickens is like, I think I've said it on like a previous podcast or something like that. Dickens can be feel like quite inaccessible, like quite, I don't know, heavy, but Iannucci just like, is that how you say his last name? Yeah, he like he just makes it so beautiful and so entertaining. And I just love the way that it's like filmed. It's so inventive. It's like a storybook. I love the characters. I love the cast. I think the casting is brilliant. I love Dev Patel. He's just one of my favorite actors. And I just think it's just a great adaptation. And it really like takes that quirkiness of Dickens and makes it like, and then really translates that into a film. Like, a lot of like adaptations of Dickens can be quite like depressing and quite like trudgy and not very good, but Copperfield is just so bright, and yeah, I just, like I said, special place in my heart. But also I love Casino Royale as well. I think it turns a very problematic book into a very mature and almost empowering for the women in it, you know what I mean? So, and Call Me By Your Name is just gorgeous as well. But yeah, Lord of the Rings just, I feel like, in my brain, like, paled against all of them.
I guess it stood more of a test of time in comparison to the others as well. So it's just sort of solidified itself as like I'm going to say Lord of the Rings, like, the trilogy is a classic. I feel like in 50 years' time, it'll be like one of those films where it's like, oh yeah, Lord of the Rings. Because I guess that's kind of what we've been saying. Like, it's just like, we just thought it would go that way.
Yeah.
It's like a written rule or something.
I'm not angry, but just personal preferences and tastes, isn't it? I like the other films more. But as an adaptation, I suppose it's really good.
That was our last category. Thank you to everybody who voted and to everybody who's been following along with On the Same Page over our last few months that we've been doing this now. Yeah, it's kind of sad that this is our last episode on Voice, but we've really enjoyed it. And thank you to everybody who's been listening. Do you guys have anything to add?
No, yeah, it's just been really fun doing it and like just chatting absolute rubbish about books for like an hour. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been so lovely. And this may be the last episode, but like any book that ends on a cliffhanger, maybe it isn't. ...
That's it from us. And we'll maybe see you next time for another episode of On the Same Page. Who knows? Stay tuned.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.